You know, when a blacksmith forges a blade, there's this really critical, precarious moment.
Right, getting the edge right.
Yeah, exactly. You want the edge to be as sharp as physically possible to do its job, but if you make it too thin, too extreme, the metal becomes brittle.
It just shatters the second it hits something hard.
Precisely. Extreme performance always seems to come at the cost of stability. So, welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are looking at a tech world that is forging some incredibly sharp blades right now. We're talking about everything from AI that hacks bank systems to phones hitting like literal thermal limits.
And we are definitely seeing the metal start to shatter in a few places.
Yeah, we really are. The goal today is to give you a cohesive look at how the entire tech ecosystem is in this highly fragile balancing act. On one side, we have phenomenal world-changing capability.
And on the other, the very real risk of just, well, losing control of our own creations.
Okay, let's unpack this because I know we've got a lot of ground to cover from our stack of sources today.
We do. And, if we connect this to the bigger picture, we are seeing that loss of control at the macro level right out of the gate.
Oh, for sure. Starting with Anthropic.
Right. Anthropic just dropped a new AI model called Mythos. And I mean, the reaction has been an immediate geopolitical earthquake.
It really has. I mean, the CEO of Anthropic was actually summoned to the White House.
Which is a very rare move. And on top of that, U.S. Treasury Secretary Bessent and Fed Chair Powell held an emergency meeting.
Wait, the Fed and the Treasury?
Yeah, specifically to discuss the immediate implications for the global banking sector.
That is wild because, Mythos isn't just another chatbot summarizing PDFs for you.
No, not at all.
It's a system that's literally designed to identify security exploit pathways in complex code. And our sources note it does this 10 times faster than previous models.
10 times faster and with 95%
And
accuracy.
it runs 24/7. It doesn't need a coffee break.
Right. It is essentially an automated lockpick that never sleeps. It's learning the shape of the tumblers faster than the people building the locks can even change them.
So how does it actually work? Like under the hood?
Well, the underlying mechanics of how it finds these pathways represent a massive shift. Historically, human cybersecurity researchers spend months, sometimes years, reverse engineering code to find a single zero-day exploit.
A zero day being a vulnerability the software vendor doesn't even know exists yet.
Exactly. And because the vendor doesn't know about it, there is zero defense against it. It's an open door.
Right.
So Mythos automates that entire discovery process. It maps out vulnerabilities at a scale and speed that humans simply cannot match.
Which sounds great for defense, right? Like developers can use Mythos to patch their own systems and massively cut security costs.
They can, but the fundamental economics of cyber warfare have just been completely upended by this.
Yeah, I look at this and I realize the sheer terror for the banking sector. I mean, think about it. If you invent a magical automated lockpick to test your own bank vaults, is it actually making us safer if there's a risk the bad guys might get their hands on that master key?
That's the exact problem.
Yeah.
The sources point out that for actors like North Korea, for example,
Right.
where state-sponsored hacking is basically utilized as an actual economic tool for regime survival, an AI super hacker is the holy grail.
It's the complete weaponization of risk discovery.
Exactly. And Anthropic clearly recognized the edge of the blade was getting too brittle here.
So they pulled it back.
Yeah, they immediately restricted access to Mythos. They placed it under strict surveillance and essentially locked it down for internal and highly vetted use only.
But they did release something else, right?
They did. To appease the market, they released a safer, highly regulated alternative to the public called Claude Opus 4.7.
But I mean, the toothpaste is already out of the tube, though.
Totally. The warnings from the Fed and the Treasury emphasize that this automated threat to critical infrastructure, it's no longer a theoretical future problem.
No, it's happening right now. And, we don't even have to look to the future to see the fallout of these kinds of
No,
vulnerabilities.
we really don't.
The messy, actual reality of modern cyber heists is playing out as we speak. Our stack of sources details a massive breach at GrinX.
Right, the sanctioned Russian crypto exchange.
Exactly. They were hacked so severely it forced a complete suspension of their operations. Over 1 billion rubles was drained.
Which is roughly 13.7 million US dollars.
Yeah, and that was spread across 54 compromised user wallets.
The data trail on this is absolutely fascinating. $15 million in USDT was transferred out via the Tron and Ethereum networks.
Now, just to clarify for everyone listening, USDT is a stablecoin.
Right.
Meaning its value is pegged to the US dollar and it's issued by a central company. And that central issuer has the technical ability to actually freeze those funds if their flag is stolen.
Which is a huge problem for the hackers.
Right. So I was looking at the ledger data, and it presents this incredible paradox. If crypto ledgers like Ethereum are entirely public and everyone in the world can see these transactions happening in real time, how exactly do hackers convert or launder $15 million without getting caught instantly?
Yeah. Well, they can't just leave the money in USDT or it gets frozen by the issuer.
Right.
So they utilize a method called chain hopping. They basically bounce the funds rapidly across dozens of different blockchains and protocols.
Just moving it as fast as possible.
Exactly. Swapping the freezable USDT into decentralized assets that no central authority can touch or freeze.
So they are essentially running a high-stakes race against the centralized issuers and the blockchain investigators.
Precisely. And while the ledger is public, the identities behind the wallet addresses are pseudonymous.
Just random strings of letters and numbers.
Right. So by automating these chain-hopping transactions, you know, splitting the funds, jumping networks, utilizing privacy mixers, they obscure the trail.
And if we connect the automation of the Grinnex hackers with the AI capabilities of something like Mythos that we just talked about.
Oh, yeah. We are looking at a near future where both the hacking of the exchange and the real-time money laundering across 50 blockchains are perfectly orchestrated by autonomous agents in milliseconds.
That is terrifying. Now, it's worth noting, Grinnex officially claims that this highly sophisticated breach is linked to, quote, foreign intelligence services.
Right. And looking at this impartially, based on the source material, it really highlights a wild geopolitical gray zone.
It does. When an exchange operating under international sanctions gets hacked, the lines between traditional cybercrime and state-sponsored cyber warfare become incredibly blurred.
They absolutely do. We are looking at a landscape where nation-states and massive exchanges are battling over millions in this sort of dark forest of cyberspace.
Right. So the scale of these macro-level threats naturally forces us to look at the micro-level defenses. Because if governments and major exchanges are struggling to secure billions, how is our daily personal data being protected from smaller everyday threats?
Well, it requires an entirely new structural defense. And Google's rollout of Android 17 introduces exactly that.
With the contact picker.
Yes. The contact picker is a major privacy shift.
Because up until now, when a new app asked for your contacts to find your friends, it was an all or nothing proposition.
Right. You either gave them everything or nothing.
You either handed over your entire digital address book, or you just couldn't use the feature. It's always felt so invasive. It's like handing a bouncer your entire wallet just to check your ID at the door.
That is a perfect way to describe it. What Google is doing now is essentially building a standardized ID scanner that every club is forced to use.
Oh, I like that.
The contact picker is a standardized secure interface right at the operating system level. So users can now pick specific contacts to share.
And even specific data fields, right?
Exactly. If a newly downloaded app needs an email address to send a calendar invite, you can grant access to only that email address.
Not the person's phone number, not their physical home address, just the email.
Just the email. And this is the kicker. 100% of new apps targeting Android 17 must use this standard interface.
Wow. So developers cannot opt out of this.
They cannot.
Right.
It is a massive philosophical shift. Google is taking the power dynamic away from the app developer and handing it directly back to the user.
To understand why Google is being so heavy-handed about making this mandatory, I looked at their contextual stats from 2025.
The numbers are staggering.
They really are. Last year alone, Google blocked 8.3 billion policy-violating ads globally.
8.3 billion.
Yeah, and they suspended 24.9 million developer accounts to clean up their ecosystem.
The sheer volume of bad actors trying to scrape data or harvest contact lists or push malicious content, it's just mind-boggling.
So you really need a structural change.
Right. When you are dealing with an ecosystem under siege at the scale of 8.3 billion violations, reactive bans are not enough.
You can't just play whack-a-mole.
Exactly. Granular permissions, like the contact picker, act as a structural mathematical defense against data harvesting. You cannot scrape what the operating system physically will not let you see.
That makes total sense. Mm. So our personal data is getting deeply compartmentalized and locked down.
Yes.
But that changes the relationship we have with the apps we actually do willingly trust.
It does.
Once the data is secured, the applications themselves are evolving in how they utilize it. They are shifting from passive tools into active agents.
And the biggest example in our sources today is Canva AI 2.0.
Yeah, this is a huge update.
It represents Canva's most significant update since 2013, honestly. They are moving the platform entirely to an agentic conversational workspace.
Powered by the Canva design model.
Right, which they are positioning as the first foundational AI model built specifically for creativity.
I mean, the feature list reads like hiring an actual digital employee. It has persistent memory.
Which means it actually learned and remembers your specific brand style and aesthetic over time.
Yeah. And it features connectors that integrate directly into your Slack or Google Drive.
It handles autonomous scheduling. It conducts its own web research to populate infographics.
It even has a Sheets AI for processing your tabular data and Canva Code 2.0 for advanced customized designs.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And it really requires us to clearly define the difference between generative AI and agentic AI for everyone listening.
Oh, please do.
So generative AI is you typing a prompt and getting an image back. Yes. It is a passive transaction.
Right, a one-to-one input and output.
Exactly. Agentic AI, on the other hand, is about orchestration, reasoning, and autonomy.
Okay.
The software industry is basically abandoning the old paradigm of, you know, do exactly what I click.
And moving towards what?
Moving towards figure out my ultimate goal and execute the multi-step process to get there.
Here is where it gets really interesting and honestly a bit scary for me. I was reading through these features, you know, the persistent memory, the web research, the autonomous scheduling, and I had a bit of an existential crisis. Like, at what point am I no longer a creator and just a middle manager for an AI employee?
That is the exact tension right now. You are transitioning from managing the pixels to managing the outcome.
Wow, managing the outcome.
Yeah. The human role shifts to high-level orchestration and quality control.
Yeah.
You set the strategic parameters, and the agent navigates the complex, tedious execution.
But giving everyone a personal, autonomous AI agent, I mean, that creates a massive infrastructural problem, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. You cannot run continuous persistent memory models locally on a standard smartphone without melting the motherboard.
Right. We are hitting a hard physics limit here. It is the literal laws of thermodynamics.
We really are.
Because to run these persistent memory AI agents seamlessly on our phones without massive cloud lag, we need localized processing power that borders on the absurd.
And MediaTek is crashing right into this physical wall with their upcoming flagship chip, the Dimensity 9600 Pro.
Yeah, they are aiming for a massive 5.00000 hertz peak speed.
Which is insane. We are talking about desktop-level gaming speeds crammed inside a glass rectangle in your pocket.
How is that even possible?
Well, the engineering behind this is incredibly dense. MediaTek is utilizing a highly complex 2+3+3 architecture.
Okay, break that down for us.
That breaks down to two massive Canyon cores for the heavy lifting, three Jealous Bay cores, and three regular Jealous cores to handle background tasks and manage the heat footprint.
All built on a 2-nanometer process, right?
Yes, built on TSMC's cutting-edge N2P 2-nanometer process, supporting ultra-fast LPDDR6 memory.
I saw the Geekbench 6 estimates for this chip, and they are off the charts. They are projecting 4,200 to 4,300 for single core.
And over 12,000 for multi-core.
For context, the previous 9500 model hit around 3,300 and 9,900 in real-world tests. So the leap in raw processing power is just massive.
It is a huge leap. But there is a glaring physical problem here.
The heat.
Exactly. Thermal density. When you shrink transistors down to a 2-nanometer process, you are packing so much power into such a microscopic space that the heat literally has nowhere to go.
Because a smartphone just lacks the physical volume for desktop-level cooling.
Right. Even with advanced vapor chambers, you know, which use evaporating liquid inside the phone to move heat away from the processor.
You still can't beat physics.
You really can't.
Mm.
Under sustained loads, like high-end gaming or running continuous local AI agents, the Dimensity 9600 Pro quickly throttles down.
From that 5 gigahertz peak.
Yeah, down to a more stable 4.00 to 4.20 gigahertz. It has to throttle to keep the silicon from literally degrading.
So what does this all mean? Like, I was looking at these throttling numbers, and it hit me. If it throttles down immediately, isn't marketing a 5 gigahertz phone basically just selling a sports car that can only hit top speed for 3 seconds before the engine overheats?
Well, what's fascinating here is the distinction between burst performance and sustained performance.
Okay, tell me more about that.
That distinction is the defining compromise of modern mobile engineering. Burst performance is what makes a phone feel snappy and instantaneous.
Like opening an app instantly, where that 5 gigahertz really shines.
Exactly. Or processing a photo the exact moment you tap the shutter. It finishes the intense task before the heat can even build up and then immediately rests.
Got it.
And honestly, even when the chip is forced to throttle down for sustained tasks, maintaining 4.2 gigahertz on a 2-nanometer chip inside a fanless enclosure is still a remarkable engineering feat.
That is fair, but it does prove that we are hitting a thermal wall. Pushing this much power through tiny spaces runs extremely hot, and it devours battery chemistry at an unprecedented rate.
It really does.
So if these insanely powerful 5 gigahertz chips are going to burn so hot and fast and just devour battery life, how does the industry solve that?
Well, do we invent a revolutionary new battery chemistry? According to Vivo, no.
No?
No. We just use pure, unadulterated brute force.
I love this part.
Vivo is launching the Y600 Pro in May 2026 in China. And its standout feature isn't some sleek new design. It is a gargantuan 10,000 milliamp hour battery.
That is just ridiculous. I mean, the market average for a smartphone battery right now is what, around 5,000 milliamp hours?
Roughly, yeah. Even the previous generation of this specific phone, the Y600, was 7,000.
So Vivo is introducing a massive 43% jump in capacity in a single generation.
Exactly. And it delivers 2 to 3 days of normal use, 20 hours of continuous video playback, or 15 hours of heavy, sustained gaming.
I just have to laugh at the sheer scale of it. It's like, instead of trying to build a more efficient light bulb, Vivo basically just strapped a portable generator to our back.
They really did.
But honestly, no more battery anxiety. I respect the brute force approach.
It definitely solves the problem. And to handle that massive fuel tank, it features 90-watt fast charging, which gets the entire 10,000 milliamp hours to a full charge in about an hour.
Which is pretty fast for a battery that size.
Oh, absolutely. It also packs a 50-megapixel main camera, a 1.5K AMOLED 120Hz display, a MediaTek Dimensity 7400 chip, and it has this really distinct purple circular camera island on the back.
So it's not a subtle phone?
Not at all. And it represents a fascinating shift in consumer hardware calculations.
Also,
well, historically, mobile design has been dictated by an absolute obsession with thinness.
Right.
Every year, devices had to be sleeker, lighter, more minimalist.
Yeah, often sacrificing battery life just to shave off a millimeter of thickness.
Exactly. But Vivo is making a calculated bet here. They are betting that there is a massive, underserved demographic out there.
Like travelers, creators, and gamers.
Right. People who are deeply fatigued by battery anxiety. They're willing to sacrifice a sleek form factor and carry a noticeably heavier, thicker device in exchange for absolute power independence.
It makes sense. If you cannot beat the physics of processor power draw, you simply bring a bigger fuel tank.
Exactly.
You know, looking at the entire stack of sources today, it really brings our journey perfectly full circle.
It really does.
We started at the absolute bleeding edge of software with Anthropic's Mythos, where AI is now so fast and automated, it actually threatens the foundations of global cybersecurity.
And we saw how those automated capabilities are blurring the lines of state-sponsored cyber heists with GrinX, you know, forcing hackers to chain hop across blockchains to launder millions.
Right. Then from those massive macro-level threats, we traced the defensive shift down to the micro-level.
With Android 17's contact picker.
Yeah, giving us our privacy back by standardizing defense to protect an ecosystem under siege from billions of malicious data scrapers.
And we then saw how applications like Canva 2.0 are utilizing the data we do willingly share to evolve from passive tools into autonomous, persistent memory agents.
And finally, we looked at the massive physical toll those AI agents actually take on our hardware.
Pushing the literal limits of heat and battery chemistry.
Yeah. We're engineering chips like the Dimensity 9600 Pro that hit the thermal limits of 5 gigahertz, which forces companies like Vivo to abandon decades of sleek design philosophy just to strap 10,000 milliamp hour batteries to our phones to keep the whole system alive.
The technological ecosystem is pushing extraordinary boundaries right now. But managing the heat, the power draw, and the immense security risks of these new capabilities, I mean, that is the defining engineering challenge of the decade.
It truly is. Which leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder today.
Yep.
As our apps continue to evolve into these continuous background agents orchestrating our daily workflows, and our processors keep striving for blazing desktop-level speeds,
what happens next?
Right. Will an absurd, heavy 10,000 milliamp hour battery soon stop being a niche novelty and become the bare minimum physical requirement just to get through a single day?
Well, the extreme brute force of today has a funny habit of becoming the necessary baseline of tomorrow.
That is so true. To you, our listener, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the extremes of our tech landscape.
It's been a fun one.
Keep questioning the tools shaping your world. Stay curious, and we will see you next time.